Everyone has a story to tell. What's yours? You're listening to Around the World with Dan Perry. Do you enjoy hearing tales of world adventure? Would you like travel advice from those who know the road well? Maybe you want to embark on a journey of your own, and you just need a bit of motivation to get started. You'll find all of that and more on Around the World with Dan Perry. Happy New Year, everybody. First podcast of the year. Feels really good to be back at it. Katie and I have been spending our time in the Philippines of late. So Katie and I used to live in Beijing, China, and she had a bunch of colleagues from the Philippines, and one of them graciously invited us to come visit him in his hometown, which is on Cebu Island. And we spent Christmas there with him and his family, having a fantastic time. After that, we did a little bit of island hopping. We went to Bohol Island, and we ended up in the town of Hagna at a hostel called Paseo del Mar. We really enjoyed this place. First of all, because it's a tropical climate, there's palm trees everywhere, coconuts everywhere. You throw a papaya on the ground, and a year later, you've got a papaya tree. It's crazy how things grow super fast there. Very hot every day. Sometimes we get a little bit of rain to cool it off, but excellent climate, especially considering all the people back home who have been telling me how freezing cold it is in the U.S. right now. So I'm happy to have avoided that. So we traveled around the island a little bit, and among other things, I got back into scuba diving. I hadn't been diving for 10 years. It felt a little weird the first time, going back into the water with all the gear. It's just unnatural, you know, breathing underwater. It's not something that humans are really meant to do. I had to do a couple of little tests to reintroduce myself to this sport, one of which is taking off my mask while underwater, just taking it completely off and then clearing out all of the water from the mask. It's pretty easy to do, but it's just a little unsettling when you first try it because, well, you're underwater. And taking out the regulator, making sure I'm not going to drown or freak out while I'm under. It's just weird breathing through that thing while under the water, and breathing through my mouth, I found, is weird. But luckily, I didn't panic or anything, and we were able to go deeper into the ocean and explore at about 17, 18 meters under. Wow, this place is amazing. The coral reef here is really alive, just flourishing with life. There's so many beautiful colors. There's all these different fish swimming around. Unfortunately, I don't have an underwater camera, so I didn't take any pictures of the place. You'll just have to trust me that underneath that ocean, there's a whole ecosystem lurking, and it's really cool to go visit it for a while. The most unsettling thing I think I found once I was under for a while was just realizing that this is an alien world, but actually I'm the alien and this is their world. Humans are not meant to be doing this, but we figured out how to do it, so hey, why not? But there's another thing that you can do instead of scuba diving, and that's simply holding your breath. Well, you can snorkel too, and you can breathe through the snorkel at the surface. But what if stuff is a little bit deeper? The cool stuff that you really want to see is down far enough that you can't really see it that well from the surface. You can always just hold your breath and dive down and look at it. And that is the very basic concept of a somewhat more complicated activity called free diving. And that's where we get to today's guest. His name is Jerome Hulin, and I met him at the hostel where we were staying in Hagna. He's originally from France, and he probably spends at least half of his time in his home country. But he has Well, he used to be a scuba instructor, as you'll hear in our podcast, but he really got into freediving in the last several years, and now he teaches people how to do it. There's a lot of relaxation techniques involved and just building up the physical capacity, but mostly just the mental capacity to hold your breath for a long time so you can go down and see the cool stuff and actually be down 15, 20 meters below sea level for a couple of minutes so that you can really enjoy yourself. When I first heard of freediving, I think I saw someone on a YouTube video or a movie or something with one of those giant monofins going really, really deep, like over 100 meters down. That's like 300 feet below the surface. Crazy deep. And it just seems like this really extreme sport and super dangerous. And I never thought I might try it myself, but after meeting Jerome, I think I might actually get into this, at least try it out, because it's not nearly as dangerous as you might think initially. And Jerome's going to explain exactly why that is, that the human body is actually quite good at staying underwater for a long time on one breath of air. All right, well, that's just the introduction. Jerome is going to give you a lot more detail. I learned a ton by talking to him. So whether you're already into freediving and you just want to hear some stories, or if you've never even given it a thought and you want to know what it's all about, this podcast is going to be great for you. So let's get into it and jump into my conversation with Jerome Houlin. What brought you here?
All right, the Philippines. So I had been doing some traveling in Europe, Central America, and then I was already a scuba diving instructor, and I wanted to go to Asia. And I met a friend when I was in the Canary Islands. He was a really, really long time scuba instructor. He had done more than 50 countries, and he wanted to go back to the Philippines again, but for good this time. Because among the country he had visited, it's one of the countries where he said like it's very easy to set up,
okay,
start a business, and have a good life. Blah, blah, blah. So I was really happy because I wanted to go to Asia, so we could go together, and he would show me around, and,
okay,
and give me some ideas like, what's the life there? It was fine for the first couple of weeks, but then we had some arguments and we didn't really have the same lifestyle.
Really?
So after 3 weeks we split, and then I went to meet some other friends, and then I ended up in Panglao, and then it was my first job in the Philippines as a scuba instructor for the season.
Uh-huh.
That's where I started freediving, actually.
Okay.
Because there was... I think it was 6 years ago, five, 6 years ago. And I was working in a small shop in Arona Beach. And one of my colleagues, she was a freediver, but with no certification, just self-taught. Mm. And whenever we would not be working, she would tell me, oh, let's go freediving together. And, so. Uh-huh. And then she just gave me a few tips. Because before that, I had tried freediving on my own. But when you try on your own with any advice, like any course or training, you really feel that you suck at it.
Oh, okay.
Because you just go down, it's hard to like swim against your own buoyancy. And then like just 10 seconds, you want to breathe and you feel like you're dying. So
yeah. Could you just explain to people the difference between scuba diving and freediving?
Mm-hmm.
I think people probably have a good idea what scuba is.
But, yes. Yeah, the scuba diving. So scuba means self-contained underwater breathing apparatus. Mm-hmm. So that means you're breathing from a tank, you're breathing air underwater that is given to you through a regulator that gives you the air at the exact pressure at the depth you're at. So you breathe normally.
Yeah, so you're just like breathing underwater.
Breathing underwater.
Uh-huh.
If you're freediving, you have none of this tank and regulate your equipment. You just take a full breath on the surface, and then you do a duck dive, and you swim down with your own legs, like swimming with your own legs. There are some disciplines probably you've seen in movies or videos where people go down with a sled, with like 30 kilos of weight, and then they rocket down to the bottom. It's quite an extreme version of freediving, but it's still the same principle. You take a full breath, and all your time underwater is used with that single breath of air.
Yeah.
So the challenges are, for most people, it will be enjoying the reef, being able to go down to 5-10 meters and stay down for 1 minute would be nice. Because in 1 minute, you have time to swim around, look for fish, take maybe a picture.
So that's a good goal, huh? 1 minute?
Yeah, 1 minute is already quite a good achievement if you can swim down to 10 meters and stay down. So you would stay down maybe for 40 seconds, and then another 10-15 seconds to come up. You will make a whole like 1 minute, 1 minute 15 dive. If you've got a little bit of training, you can do that. And then you really start to enjoy the activity.
Okay.
All right. So I tried on my own, but it was frustrating. And just a couple of days with my friend who taught me about relaxation, a little bit of breathing. And then suddenly it was like, wow.
Okay.
I could do this the whole time. I just didn't know that I had to relax and get my mind in a nice place. And then you make a huge, step. And then you start enjoying it. And then I got hooked. And so with other friends that I met, we started like going freediving all the time.
Yeah.
And getting a little bit deeper and getting a little bit more comfortable and so on and so on.
Are you holding on to weights when you, or do you have a belt, weight belt when you go down?
I have weights only if I use a suit. So the idea of the weight is to compensate for the buoyancy of your suit.
Of the wetsuit, you mean?
Yeah, the wetsuit.
Okay.
Right. So most people, like almost everybody, if they don't use a wetsuit, they won't need any weight go down. You float on the surface. You need to float on the surface for safety. You shouldn't be overweighted. You shouldn't like have to kick on the surface to maintain on the surface. Otherwise, like if you have a problem, it will be difficult to rescue you, or maybe you will sink down.
Sure.
So you have to float on the surface, but you shouldn't be too buoyant so that you can escape from the high buoyancy on the surface and start swimming down.
So the lower you go, the easier it is to sink, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because since you're not breathing air like in scuba, when you're going down, boils low will have your lungs getting smaller. Because when the pressure increases, it's like a balloon or like an empty bottle that you take in the sea. It will be crushed by the pressure.
Yeah.
And every 10 meters of seawater, the pressure increases by 1 bar. And then, for example, if the pressure doubles, then the size of your lungs will be half.
Okay.
So if you go to 30 meters, go down from a surface to 30 meters, for example, the pressure will be 4 bars. And so your lungs will be only 1/4 of what they used to be on the surface. They will be like compressed and compressed. So that means when you swim down, your lungs get smaller. So your weight is the same, but your volume, your overall volume of the body is smaller.
Oh, okay.
So your density increases. And then you're much less buoyant.
Right.
Until the point where you're even like less buoyant than the water itself. So when you reach 20, 25 meters and you stop swimming, you start falling, actually.
Whew. That's scary.
So it's called the free fall. It's one of the what most freediver enjoy the most in a dive. It's the moment where you don't need to swim anymore. You can slow down the swimming, slow down until you reach 20, 30 meters, and then you stop swimming. And you get into a hydrodynamic position, really like a candle, like with your hands on the side and really streamlined with like the head straight and the leg straight, and then you just sink with the head first.
But then how do you get back up?
Then you have to turn around and swim.
You're able to swim up still.
Yeah, so that's also why you shouldn't be overweighted.
Yeah.
If you're overweighted, the descent will be easy, but then coming up will be harder. So you have to find the right balance between comfort and safety. Mm-hmm. Right? But the natural buoyancy of the body is very close to that of water, because we are made of 70% of water. Uh-huh. And the rest is mostly like fat and some muscles. So the muscles, they sink, but the fat floats.
Okay.
So that's why we float mostly on the surface. But just a little bit. Just enough to sustain yourself on the surface.
Right.
Yeah. So if I don't have a suit, a wetsuit, for example, and I swim down, probably around 10 meters already, I will start to I'll be about neutral at 10 meters. And a little bit deeper, I will start to sink.
But does it ever get to the point where you're deep enough that you cannot swim back up?
No, because the lungs, they get smaller, but once they are small, I mean, they will shrink a lot from 0 to 10 meters, like half.
Yeah.
But then from 10 to 20, only one third less.
Right.
And then from 20 to 40, only one quarter of it. So you never get to zero.
Okay.
It's a linear law.
Okay.
So, No, you don't get to that point. But for example, if your lungs, average lungs of humans are about 6 liters for a man.
Yeah.
If you get to 30 meters, so it's only one quarter of it, 1.5 liters. So let's say 2 liters to make things simple. It's as if you had like 4 kilos more than on the surface.
Ah, all right.
Because
so,
it's four liters of air left. Less.
Oh, and each liter is a kilo. Oh, it's replaced.
And
one liter of
seawater is about 1 kilo.
Right. Yeah.
So it's similar to having a weight bait of 4 kilos.
Okay. And if I put 4 kilos around my waist, I could still swim. It'd just be more effort.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then
I understand.
As you swim up, it gets easier and easier.
Okay.
And when you reach 10 meters, you can almost stop swimming. You will.
Sure. Yeah.
You will be buoyed up to the surface.
I've never gone that low, so anytime I've just held my breath and gone down, I easily just float right back up.
So an ideal speed would be 1 meter per second when you free dive. So at the beginning, the first 10 meters, you have to kick like hard. And then 10 meters, 15, slow down, 20 meters, almost stop. And then between 20 and 30 meters, you can start sinking. And if you're really streamlined, you will sink at almost 1 meter per second.
Right.
It's quite fast. Uh-huh. And then you turn, you have to kick hard, and then easier.
But are
you keep the speed constant, but the force you give is different. It's harder at the beginning of the ascent and the descent, and then you can slow down.
Is there a danger, though, if you go too fast? Like scuba, there's a danger.
Yeah, in scuba diving, there's a lot of risks of decompression sickness. Uh-huh. If you're at the bottom and then suddenly you have a problem and you shoot back to the surface, because of the nitrogen bubbles, they can cause this. If you're free diving, you only have your lungs, so that's a very small quantity of air. Uh-huh. So for recreational free diving, it doesn't cause any problem. You could go to 30 meters and really go very fast to the surface.
Okay,
it's fine.
It only affects you if you go really deep.
Okay, yeah. So the two main disciplines where you could get a problem with decompression sickness would be the no limits things, where you get really, really deep, like deeper than like maybe 90 meters. Oof. Even with the monofin, you could get to 90 meters. Uh-huh. So actually, it's not only with the sled. So if you go deeper than, like, say, 80, 90 meters, when you come back to the surface, it's a good idea to breathe some pure oxygen for a few minutes. Just to ease the nitrogen to gas off your body.
To disperse it.
Yeah. Or people who have decompression sickness accidents are people who spend like one full afternoon free diving and spearfishing. And like, they go down to 30 meters, they come up, very short interval. They go down again. Come up, short interval. Go down.
But it builds up
so
over time.
So it's accumulated, it builds up the nitrogen, and at the end of the day, you could have an accident. So this is very common to, for example, in there are many countries where they have this very old culture of free diving to pick up shells and spearfish. For example, in the Philippines, they're called the Bajao or the Sama. There are many communities in the south, in Mindanao. And they are quite good because they start when they are kids.
Sure.
And they are able to go like to 30, 40 meters, like 30, 40 times a day.
Wow.
With short intervals because they need it for their lifestyle.
And they probably don't have fins then, right?
No.
Wow, so they can just use their feet to
come they back have up. The one I met there in Mindanao, they use a rope around their waist. And they are tied to the boat.
Oh, so someone pulls them up.
Yeah. So they go to the bottom, and then when they are done gathering things or spearfishing, they pull on the line to give the signal to the boatman, and the boatman pulls the line and brings them up.
Got it.
So there's no... With this style, which is safe, is that nobody dies. Mm-hmm. Because you're always on a leash.
Yeah.
So you just pull them up. Even if you have a problem, you will come back.
Eventually,
the
if they don't signal, then just pull me up. And
Okay. They will be retrieved and they will be revived. No problem.
Uh-huh.
But the problem is, there's some decompression problems when you do a lot of repetitive dives with very short intervals. Uh-huh. And usually these people, they don't really know about the physics behind it.
Right. Yeah.
And after like years and years of diving, they accumulate like pain in the joints, like typical symptoms of decompression sickness. Like they are very stiff. They're hard to move.
Wow.
And they don't really know about it.
No one went and taught them or
Yeah. It's like the math behind it is
you
have to learn it. It's not obvious.
No, but someone could go say like, hey, I know why you have all this stiffness. If you dive like this instead.
Or give them advice.
Yeah.
The common advice for like for example what I teach in the courses is that if you have a dive of 2 minutes, you should wait 4 minutes on the surface.
Okay. Yeah.
So you take your dive time, you multiply by 2, and you stay on the surface for that amount of time before going down again.
Yeah.
This works. It's
That's easy enough to understand.
It's probably very conservative.
Okay. Yeah.
But we don't want to take any more risks.
Yeah, I remember learning scuba diving and having the dive tables, and it's it's all really conservative. But you typically can only get in two dives a day, and
you can do much more.
You can
do 3-4 dives.
Really? Oh, okay. Yeah. I thought you could only do 2.
Yeah. You need a long surface intervals and calculate again and again, or with your computer.
Oh, okay.
Huh. But then the last 2-3 dives of the day will be shallow. 10-15 meters maximum.
Oh, all right.
Oh, but people on liveaboard, they do 4-5 dives a day.
They
sometimes.
Do. Oh.
Yeah.
See, I've been out of this world for so long. I don't know.
But only the first and the second dive can be deeper than 20 meters.
Okay.
Then you have to really be careful.
Yeah.
Mm. Free diving, you can free dive the whole day if you want. No
right.
Problem. As long as you respect the intervals in between each dive, that's fine.
Oh, okay. Mm. That I get, and that seems safe to me, but just the concept itself seems pretty dangerous. I mean, I've never tried it, so
freediving has had for a long time a reputation of being dangerous, and many people died because they didn't know about the risks involved. So the main risk is the blackout. When you stay underwater for too long, your oxygen is so low that your brain triggers a kind of coma to save oxygen, and then you will pass out.
Yeah.
But you're not drowning yet. You're just falling into a coma and you're still in the water. If you're alone, then you will most likely drown, because after maybe 1 minute, your brain will try to reactivate and tells you, okay, let's try a desperate last breath.
Okay.
But if your head is still in the water, then you will inhale water.
Okay.
Right? If you're with a buddy and you see that your buddy has just passed out, the thing you have to do is to get him to the surface, if he's not already on the surface, and make sure that the airways are clearly out of the water, and then you will blow on his face. You will gently tap on his shoulder and talk to him. Yeah, it's okay, you're on the surface, you can breathe, you tell him his name, it's okay, you can breathe.
Yeah.
And just a few seconds, and the victim will wake up again and won't remember of anything.
Oh, really?
And just keeps, like, resume breathing as if nothing happened without remembering it.
They don't remember being under the water and passing out?
Oh, no, you remember the dive, but you don't remember passing out.
Ah, wow.
So what? That's funny, for example, in the competitions, if some diver tries a really hard dive, comes back to the surface, and then passes out,
yeah,
then he will wake up and then still give an okay to the judge, thinking that he made the dive. Because you don't remember, like, passing out and waking up.
Oh, wow.
And then the safety team will have to tell you, you blacked out. What? You don't believe it. You have to see it on the video to believe it.
Wow.
Yeah. So the body is really resilient in the water. Even if you pass out, the body will still, like, have your throat locked. You won't inhale any water.
Okay.
So you have plenty of time to do the rescue and make sure that the airway is out of the water, and then you will wake up again.
Okay.
So if you train this, like, the first level of freediving, any agency will train you that, how to do it, how to make sure that your body will regain consciousness.
Wow.
And then if you follow these rules, it's completely safe. Like, nobody will ever die if you know how to rescue and you always keep an eye on each other. So another safety rule that is important: if you are, like, two buddies to go in the water, you don't go down at the same time.
Okay. Yeah.
One stays on the surface and watches the other one who dives.
Right.
Right. And then comes back to the surface, and then you look at each other for up to 30 seconds.
Yeah.
And if in 30 seconds nothing happens, okay, you're good, and then you can swap. Okay, it's your turn to dive, and I will watch you.
Wow. So if you do pass out, there's no brain damage or long term?
No, there has been studies, and none of the studies prove that if you black out, you will have some brain damage, because your heart is still beating, and oxygen is fed to the brain.
Okay. Right? So you've got about a minute after you pass out before any serious complications happen?
Yeah. Hmm. It depends. It can be a few seconds, maybe up to 2 minutes.
Oh.
I don't know exactly. It's every occurrence is a different one.
So typically when you go out, the person diving isn't on a rope or anything. They're just by themselves. And so if they pass out, you have to dive all the way down and hit them?
A blackout will almost never happen underwater.
Oh, it happens once you come up.
Yes.
Ah.
It will never happen. Like, it's very, very unlikely that it will happen deeper than, like, 7 to 10 meters.
Right? Why is
so,
that?
So first, your body will give you, like, the urge to breathe. So you will be coming up to the surface. All right. So you kind of know your limits, and then you will only black out when you're coming up and getting close to the surface. It's also, there's also a physical thing behind it, is that when you're down and the pressure increases, mm-hmm. it helps the oxygen to be distributed to your brain.
Oh, okay.
Right? So even if you're low on oxygen, the partial pressure of oxygen is so high that it flows well to the brain.
Huh.
But only when you come back to the surface and get between 0 and 10 meters, when the pressure gets, like, low again, that your oxygen, your brain could be deprived of oxygen enough that we will feel the need to trigger the blackout.
Oh, okay. Wow.
So if you go down to, say, 30 meters and you stay, you can get to the point where you're still conscious, but you're definitely sure that you will black out before reaching the surface.
Oh, no. And so you know it's going to happen.
I mean, you don't know that it's going to happen, but it's possible.
Oh, wow.
If you stay long enough, even if you feel great, the fact that the pressure will decrease when you come up will severely limit the amount of oxygen that flows to your brain.
Okay.
So you will black out.
And so if someone does black out, they're high enough up that they're naturally going to be able to float up?
Yes.
Without any
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Kicking?
It will. Yeah. In 99% of the cases, Okay, let's say 95% of the cases will happen on the surface.
Yeah.
You come up and you don't breathe properly, pass out on the surface. It's super easy to manage, to rescue, right? Maybe 5% of the cases in competitions, so really for experienced people, it will happen like between 10 meters and the surface.
Okay.
But that's the point where you're buoyant. So it's really easy to bring you up to the surface.
Wow.
Right? So the rescue is very easy, as long as you know how to do it and there's somebody for you. Because if you black out, even if you're at the surface, if you fall like with your face like facing down, the moment when your brain will decide, okay, let's take a breath again just to check, a desperate last breath, you will inhale water.
And then you're dead.
And then you will drown.
Yeah.
But it's a long way before you drown. From the blackout to the drowning, there's plenty of time. So the this bad reputation that freediving and spearfishing had for so long was because people weren't trained and they didn't know about it. So they were going alone with like too much weight. Because if you have a lot of weight, it's easy to go down and stay at the bottom with your spear gun and wait for the fish.
Okay.
But that coming up is a lot harder. So people used to black out on the way up.
Okay.
So there was a bad reputation. But then there were like more courses and some people made some really cool videos and and blah, blah, blah. And then it started to be a bit more mainstream. And it was more established then because there were so many schools that you would have access to the training and safety training. And that's where it started to get really popular.
That's cool. So there's some schools, you have a school, right?
No, I don't have a school.
Or you're just an instructor?
I'm an instructor. I used to work in a few different places. Sorry, what was your question?
Well, I was just wondering if there's places around here you can take classes to learn how to do this.
Sure. If somebody comes here and wants to learn with me, it's completely possible. I have some equipment with me, and we can go out and do any courses. Actually, I'm doing a course with some friends around here at the moment. It's just that we are a little bit injured these days.
Yeah, I came here. I was like, ooh.
So it's on hold.
Yeah, everybody here is banged up.
But as soon as everybody's fine, we can continue the training and finish the course.
And so there's a certification they get?
So I'm with this agency, which is called AIDA, which is one of the oldest freediving agency. It was created in 1992. And there are like levels of training, like level 1, level 2, level 3, and then instructor, similar to scuba diving. So the level 1, you learn the basics, how to breathe properly before a dive, how to relax, what to think about in your mind. There's a bit of physiology, like you learn what's going on with the oxygen and the carbon dioxide and what causes the urge to breathe. What is a blackout, how to safety it, how to take care of your body, how to talk to your body when it's a diving attempt. And also we learn about important things like how to duck dive properly. The first stage of the free dive, after you relax and take a full breath, you have to leave the surface and start swimming. But it's a technical movement called the duck dive, where you have to tuck your head down in the water and lift your legs above the water. In the most efficient possible way so that you don't waste oxygen. And if you have a good duck dive, you can reach already 2, 3, 4 meters. So you escape a lot of the positive buoyancy, and then you will save oxygen and have a longer dive.
Oh, then you start kicking once you get a little
lower.
You
do your duck dive, get to 2, 3, 4 meters if you're good, and only then you start kicking. So this is an important part. And also we do some pool training, a discipline called static. The static is you stay at the surface with your head down and you just hold your breath as long as possible.
Okay.
Right.
So you're not using any extra energy
at all? Nothing. So you want to relax your body as much as possible. The relaxation and the peace of mind is That's probably the discipline where it's the most important, because you're not going to move at all for 1, 2, 3, 4 or more minutes.
How long can you do it?
I can do it for 6 minutes.
Wow, 6 minutes.
So
wow. So that doing that, you can lift your head at any point. You know that you're totally safe, as long as you don't black out. But
yeah. Since you're on the surface.
Yeah.
And it takes a very long time for oxygen to go down. Mm-hmm. You will feel the symptoms of the deprivation of oxygen. So with a little bit of experience, you know exactly when you have to come out. You have this, it's not like you black out suddenly, right? Maybe in the sea, if you're swimming, you could black out suddenly because you use a lot of legs, and if you make a lot of effort, suddenly the oxygen could drop drastically, and then you could black out without any warning symptoms. But if you're not moving at all on the surface, you will feel weird things. So it's mostly in your mind. So you will feel like your vision is fading. You see some stars or like a tunnel vision. You can feel some tingling, and you can feel like your mind is not working properly anymore. It's like you feel high.
So that's why you really do it, huh?
Yeah. That's one of the components, yeah. So it's like a game where you feel like you could black out if you stayed longer, but you have to come out and make sure that you still have enough oxygen so that you will breathe and get some new oxygen in your system to stay free from passing out. Right? But you will only reach that stage after like many weeks or months of training. Because the hardest part for the beginners in the course is to deal with the urge to breathe.
Right.
You will have the urge to breathe like a long, long, long time before you will black out, like many minutes.
Oh, okay.
If you start holding your breath, for example, with my students, when they start in the swimming pool, they start holding their breath, they will start having the urge to breathe maybe after one minute, 1.5 minute.
Yeah.
And the goal in the course is to reach 2 minutes.
Okay.
So that means you will have a little struggle against your body to get to that 2 minutes if you want to do it. Or the best way is to like get used to that urge to breathe. That's one of the most difficult things for beginners, is that you will have the urge to breathe, so you feel like you're dying somehow.
Right, yeah. Right?
But at the same time, you know that you have a lot more oxygen to go.
Yeah.
So you could stay much, much longer. So even if you have the urge to breathe starting at 1 minute, you could hold your breath for more than 4 minutes. Anybody can do it. Like physiologically, if you're in the healthy person, you can hold your breath for more than 4 minutes.
Really?
No problems.
Right now I could do it.
You could do it.
If my brain,
if your mind is ready for it,
yeah,
you can do it.
Wow, I had no
you
idea.
You won't pass out.
I thought it was all a physical buildup, so it's just, you're saying to get to 4 minutes or 3 minutes maybe is mental, totally mental?
Yeah, completely.
Wow.
Then, if you're a complete beginner, maybe you would black out at, let's say, 5 minutes.
Okay.
All right? But then with training and training, the training will get that threshold like later and later and later. You learn to like relax more, so you save more oxygen. And also you train your body to work with low levels of oxygen. So that threshold is delayed. Your contractions, your urge to breathe will start later. So you can have a longer static. But any beginner, if you're in a good health, yeah, you could. I have had students who had never tried holding their breath, and they did 4 minutes on the very first day.
Whoa.
It was a struggle, but they were like really focused and they really wanted to do it, or they had really a good time.
Yeah.
The best way to do it is to get friend with the urge to breathe, and also the contractions that I mentioned it earlier. The contractions are it's a natural response of your body when the carbon dioxide levels are getting higher and higher. First, you will feel the need to breathe.
Mm-hmm.
And if you keep holding your breath past that stage, maybe a few more seconds or 30 seconds or 1 minute, yeah. you will start having contractions. The contractions are spasms of any of your respiratory muscles, like the diaphragm or the chest muscles, the breathing yeah. muscles. And you will look like you have a fit a little bit.
Sure.
From time to time, your body will have a cramp or a twitching movement.
But you don't suck water in when that happens.
No.
It's just it all on the diaphragm.
You feel natural and easy to keep your throat and your mouth shut.
Okay.
It's just that you have a spasm coming yeah. from your belly or from your chest.
Wow.
These are called contractions. It's your body wanted to exhale the carbon dioxide and take in another some new fresh oxygen. Alright? Mm-hmm. And so you have these contractions, they start like they're quite small, but then after a few more seconds a new one will come, a little bit stronger. And then a few more seconds later another contraction. And then they get stronger and stronger and also closer and closer to each other. So if your mind is ready for it, you can have really strong contraction, you will look really funny from an exterior point of view. You will see somebody having spasms in the water. But still it's fine. It's just
scary,
your respiratory muscles
okay.
that they have this natural response.
Wow.
So it's really uncomfortable. But with training and repetition you get used to them. And then it's not that much of a big deal anymore.
Okay.
So that's the main training of beginners. And then when you get good enough so that you can withstand this urge to breathe and contractions and deal with it and be quite friends mm-hmm. with each other, then yeah. you can hold your breath so long that you could get to the point where you could black out.
Oh, okay.
So usually not beginners, they won't black out and drown. It's experienced diver
okay.
who think that they are safe and
and
they never had any blackouts. But once in a while it happens.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah. Also, if you have there are many other factors that can affect your breath hold and your threshold to blackout. Hydration, the quantity of sleep, if you didn't sleep well enough.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you will be tired. Alcohol or what else? Congestion. Yeah. If you're sick as well, you can be. There can be some disease incubating in your body that you don't know yet about it. But it takes a few days for a sickness to incubate. So if you go free diving, maybe your body will be weaker that day, and you don't know about it. So even if you I've done 20 meters dive again and again, you should never do it on your own. Even if you've done it 100 times.
Oh,
because every single day is different.
You never know.
Yeah. You may have a little lack of hydration and you will black out.
Right, yeah.
Even if you're really experienced.
Right.
So, never go alone, of course. So the first rule.
I remember one of my old coworkers used to work at a TV station and he told me that there's, I think, one of the big electrical boxes or transformers, he would have to go do repairs on it sometimes, and he was worried, really worried at first, that he would electrocute himself, mm-hmm. and then he realized after a while the new people never ever electrocute themselves because they take every single safety precaution really seriously and they do every single thing.
I know where you're coming at, but
yeah,
experienced
the
people
same.
They will.
They'll be like,
I
don't
make
need
a little shortcut.
I don't need to switch this switch off. It's fine, and I've done this a million times. And they're the ones who get electrocuted.
That's similar. Most car driving accidents. They will occur close to your home,
sure.
on the very last part of your driving, because
yeah.
you're close from home and you think you
just
know it by heart.
You don't devote
you don't
the energy to
as,
it.
As carefully as
right.
as you used to do.
Wow, this is just so interesting.
I have had really experienced freedivers, 20 years of freediving and spearfishing, that told me a story of having one blackout on a very easy dive. like just 15, 20 meters, even if they can do 50.
Uh-huh.
Just a 15, 20 meters dive and then suddenly a blackout.
Mm.
So
you never know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Have you ever blacked out?
Like, it would be like one chance in a million or a billion, but you don't want to take that risk.
Has it happened to you?
Yeah, I had one.
You did, huh?
Yeah, yeah. In my bed, actually.
In your bed?
Yeah, yeah. I was the only circumstance where you can train breath holding alone is if you're on land, of course, never in the sea,
right, okay.
And you lay down.
Uh-huh.
So I was holding my breath in my bed, just training static.
Uh-huh.
And I went too far, and I blacked out. I remember, I'm sure that I blacked out, because when I woke up, I wasn't on my back, I was slightly on the side.
Okay.
Right. And I have a video of it.
Oh, well, then you have proof.
Yeah, I have a proof.
You tape yourself just in case.
That was a period when I was doing a lot of static training. So I was in my bed and just holding my breath and again and again, like doing repetitions. And since I was doing a lot of training, I had once in a while those symptoms of, you know, you're about to faint.
Uh-huh.
But since I know that you won't even remember it, one day I set up a camera and I film me doing the breath hold.
Right.
I have the video of me blacking out.
Oh, wow. But then you're always going to wake up and you're not...
Oh, yeah, it was just just maybe like 5 seconds.
Yeah.
And then I woke up and...
Okay.
And then I checked the camera because I had the suspicion that I had a blackout. I checked the camera and said, yeah.
Wow.
I did it. The sea, it never happened. Yeah, there's another thing that can happen before a blackout. It's called a loss of motor control. It looks like a fit where some muscle or a few muscles in your body won't work properly. The oxygen is too low and your brain sends them like weird signals. So it could be just one finger shaking a little bit like this.
Uh-huh.
It could be the whole hand like shaking like back and forth for just a few seconds.
Uh-huh.
Or your mouth, you're trying to speak, but it comes out all garbage.
Yeah.
Right? Or like the thinning can be weird. You will look like a robot.
Yeah.
And it's like some part of your body will shake, like without any control.
This is after you're out of the water or near the surface?
That's when you, like mostly when you come back to the surface.
Hmm.
And you're still conscious.
Mm-hmm.
But the oxygen is getting low enough that your brain is having a little bit of trouble, so you can have just one hand like this, or your head.
Like
that's funny, just for a few seconds.
Uh-huh.
That's, again, like no problem at all if you're with your buddy. You just help your buddy stay above the water.
Sure, okay.
But I had this maybe two times.
Not much. Considering how long you've been doing it for, I mean.
That's fine. Yeah. Yeah. And you don't want to have them, and a loss of motor control is not an issue. Like, there's no health problem, even a blackout. Mm. But you want to avoid them, because every time, if you really push yourself and you're not ready, and you have repetitive blackouts, you will kind of associate the diving with blacking out.
Yeah.
And then you start making associations, and then you start, I guess you will start thinking, oh, this dive is quite deep. What if I black out again? So, if you want to improve your diving in a good way, you have to make sure that your dives are really enjoyable.
Mm.
If one day you're at the bottom and you come up and the dive is too difficult and you panic, you will still go back to the surface. But after having this panic experience, your brain will think twice the next time you go to that same depth.
Right.
And then your subconscious will also give you some signals, even unconscious. For example, you won't be able to equalize anymore.
Oh, okay.
Like equalize your ears on the way down. And it seems like, I've seen it many times with students or friends, like they have a bad experience in the sea or they are not comfortable with the depth.
Uh-huh.
And somehow their body will not allow them to get there some way or some other. For example, the urge to breathe will come much earlier, which is not normal.
Yeah.
But your subconscious will try anyway to deny you to do that dive because it thinks it gets association with this dive is dangerous.
Sure.
But if you're like improving little by little and make sure that you enjoy every one of them, then you will have like a positive attitude towards the the new depth.
I'm noticing a lot of parallels here with rock climbing actually. Like this is so similar.
Yeah.
If you have a bad fall with climbing,
yeah, exactly.
It's really hard to get
on
back on the wall.
On that particular path that you have to redo again.
Yeah. You almost have to go do it again and just get over it.
Yeah. Or
go back and do something really easy.
Yes.
And
on the severe cases of like a plateau in freediving where you're blocked at the depth. Because as soon as you're getting closer to the depth, when you're going down, your mind is starting to bother you and giving you like weird images. And there's no point in trying again and again and again. You should reduce the depth by 10 meters, for example, and then make an easy dive and reassociate it with like nice feelings. And then slowly increase again and get back to the depth where you were blocked.
Okay.
So probably in climbing, it would be the same. You just go do something else. And like find again the enjoyment of climbing.
Right, you need a confidence builder.
Yeah.
Something.
Build up your confidence again and then pass that obstacle that you had.
Yeah. Definitely. There's very much plateaus in climbing too that are hard to get over. Physical ones and mental ones.
Yeah. Yeah, of course the mental is really important. Climbing and freediving, right? Have a lot of similarities.
So do you always know how deep you're going? Or going to try to go? I mean, do you ever dive where the floor is, let's say, really, like, too deep?
Sorry, that was one question you asked earlier, but we changed topic.
Yeah,
you were asking if we're always diving with a line or not.
Oh, I asked that, yeah.
So, if we're going, I would say there are two main things I do when I go freediving. Either I go with a friend, and we want to enjoy the reef. So then we just take fins and masks, that's all. And we watch each other. We go down and we are looking for fish, turtles, or some slugs, things like this. Come back to the surface. Oh, I saw this thing. You should check it out.
So the point is not to go as deep as possible. The point is just to have fun exploring the
bottom.
Yes,
that's what most of the people who want to learn freediving, they want to be able to do.
Yeah,
most
sure.
people, they are not really interested in like, going as deep as possible. Mm. This is the other activity. Going out with a buoy, a line. At the bottom of the line is the bottom weight. Make sure that the line is straight. The line is taped every 5 meters, so you can set it up to whatever depth you want.
Okay.
And then you dive down and up on that line.
Are you clipped in with a carabiner though?
Yes. If you're diving deeper than 20, 30 meters, or if the visibility is not good, you should always be clipped on the line.
Yeah.
So you have a wristband, and then there's a... It's a kind of leash. It's called a lanyard with a carabiner on the other end, and you clipped it on the main line.
Right, okay.
So even if you go down and you really have a good experience, you close your eyes and you kind of start dreaming and falling asleep, you won't drift away from the line.
Yeah.
All right? And at the bottom of the line, you cannot go deeper because at the bottom there's a stopper, something big, attached to the line, and it will stop you.
Okay.
So it will wake you up just in case you wouldn't be... looking at the line.
Yeah.
Right? So what I do mostly when I'm going down, I try to close my eyes most of the time, but I open them like once in a while just to check that I'm still in front of the line.
Oh. Are you wearing a mask or no?
A mask or a nose clip. You can
use
both. If you want to dive quite deep, it will be easier with just a nose clip. Because if you're wearing a mask, that will take a lot of air to equalize.
Oh yeah,
because you have to blow out some air in the mask to equalize the pressure as you go down, and this will take some precious air that you cannot use for your lungs or for your ears or your brain.
Mm.
All right, so usually after some training, people who like to go for depth, they switch and they remove the mask and they dive just with a nose clip.
Okay,
but then you won't see anything.
Right.
You can still see the line. It's very blurry.
Yeah.
But it's an inconvenient, but it's also an advantage that you won't have any distraction from the outside. So you dive mostly just by like feeling, right? So you cannot read your watch and know at what depth you're at. You just go down and try to be in a good mood until you're at the bottom. When you're at the bottom, you know you're at the bottom. You turn and you just
You're at the end of the line. So okay, it doesn't matter how deep the ocean is.
So these are the two activities. Either you go for fun on the reef, just having fun exploring, finding fish, or you go for depth. The good thing with going for depth is that if you train on the line, it's like going to school. You train on the line with a lanyard and you're trying to go deeper or stay longer. Is that you... It's a real form of training. So you will push your body, you will shock your body a little bit.
Yeah.
So you will adapt to it. And then when you go back to the reef and enjoy with your friends, you will notice that, oh, I'm able to stay a little bit longer.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So they complement each other. Complement
cool.
each other.
Yeah, yeah.
These two. I like both. I really like both. I like the training and also like to enjoy the reef.
And the reef is what, maybe 15 meters usually, or?
Yeah. If you're in, especially in the Philippines or in Asia, most of the reef is between 5 and 20 meters. Mm. So it doesn't take like years and years of experience before you can enjoy that.
Yeah,
just a few days of training, and you're good to go. If you're in Europe, there's some reef as well, but like, for example, interesting thing in the Mediterranean will be the wrecks, and they are like quite deep, like 30 meters, 40 meters.
Okay.
It's more challenging.
Uh-huh.
All right? But everywhere around Asia, I would say it's a perfect place to learn freediving, because you can enjoy right away at 5-10 meters. The water is warm and there's a lot of light.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of things to see.
Oh.
So that's why it's also like really booming here around Asia. People come here and they want to enjoy the reef. They can see it from the surface when they go snorkeling.
Yeah.
And yeah, they want to go down a little bit further, get closer and challenge themselves.
Yeah, I like the idea a lot too of doing that. It's almost like another climbing comparison. It's almost like bouldering versus like trad climbing, or bolted climbing, like sport climbing.
Mm-hmm.
If you're sport climbing, you're relying on stuff that's attached to the wall, and you've got a lot more equipment.
Yeah.
And if you are just bouldering, it's just you and the wall. You're only wearing your chalk bag.
Mm-hmm.
That's all you have.
Yeah. And you repeat, and
you get better at it. Right. Mm-hmm. Right. It's cool. Like, so scuba diving, I've never really lived near the ocean. I've just traveled a lot and occasionally come across good diving places. So I learned how to dive. I've done it a few times, not much. But it's just, there's a lot of equipment involved. It's a different thing.
Yeah, there's this freedom in freediving that is really enjoyable.
There's something about the purity of it, of just holding your breath, and that's all it is.
I'm really annoyed by the scuba diving equipment now. I used to teach it, but now even the regulator in my mouth, it feels heavy, and it feels like it's like trying to tear my teeth apart. And it's a small feeling, but it's just that is already annoying.
Yeah.
I feel so free with nothing in my mouth and nothing on my back.
Yeah.
I can go anywhere as well. You don't need a scuba diving center to...
Right.
To enjoy the place.
You can stay in your bed and enjoy
it. Yeah. You just learn about, there's a nice snorkeling place over there.
Uh-huh.
Just take your mask and your fins and a friend, and you just go and check it out. No need to organize with a scuba diving center and make appointment. And
or pay $50.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah, you can also do... We have a really nice... little project with a friend who is sailing. He's also freediving, and last year he was in the Philippines. He rented a sailing boat and took some freedivers with him and went around the islands. So that's a really good tool. So you can take a boat and go to the remote places. where there's not even scuba diving center.
Ah, okay.
And you can dive from the boat on the shore of the island, or set foot on the island and then dive from there.
Huh.
And the freedom is incredible.
All right.
So he did this last year. I couldn't join, but this year he's planning to come again, and we're planning to set up some freediving trips.
Sounds cool. Do you have a website already set up or
no,
nothing like that?
He has one.
Okay.
It's called Apnea Sailing.
Apnea?
Apnea, oh. Yeah. Apnea is the, I think it's Latin or Greek word for breath hold.
Oh, I know, sleep apnea.
Sleep apnea. Okay. Apnea is holding your breath. In French, freediving is called apnea.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. Huh. And yeah, it's apneasailing.com.
Okay, so well, I'll put a link to that for sure.
yeah, he's a really good friend. He's a doctor as well. It's good to have a doctor on the boat.
A medical doctor.
Yeah.
Not the PhD kind.
Yeah, a medical doctor.
Yeah.
And we'll do this probably starting in March, April.
Oh, all right. Is that like,
yeah, very
is
soon.
That the best time of year to go, or you're just getting it set up?
Not really. It's because like it's the moment we will meet again.
Yeah.
And he will be free because he's working at the hospital right now. So he's working at the hospital for a few months, and then he goes on a trip for freediving a couple of months.
Oh, okay.
And then hospital again.
All right. Yeah. Well, I'll put a link to that on my website.
Yeah, sure.
If you ever get a website put together, just let me know. And
I will probably have to set up one someday if I start my school, of course.
But, yeah.
I will see.
I mean, it's already, like you said, this is a sport that's already becoming really popular. And I could see it just becoming more mainstream as people learn, like I just did, that it's not actually that dangerous. And you can learn, like you were also, that's really encouraging that you said you don't need a lot of practice just to go down to have fun.
Yeah,
you don't
exactly.
need to study it for years and years.
No.
So that's
as
really
soon
encouraging.
As you have like the first level is two to 3 days, you learn like basic things, but like really important. And just with this basic baggage, you're already able to go in a lot of places, and you will improve and improve. Right. The next level, maybe only 10% of the people who took the level one, they want to go through the level two.
Uh-huh.
The level two will be mostly about training, how to train yourself. It's quite demanding. You will go through a lot of air to breathe and repetitions, tables. It's harder for the body and the mind, but you will get really, really, really good at it. But most people, they just want to enjoy the reef, so they want the basics, how to go down, fin, duck dive, and the safety.
Okay. So you could conceivably even just come here on like a 10-day holiday with no knowledge at all and spend your first 2 days just getting into it and then go off and explore.
Completely.
Okay.
As long as you have somebody with you.
You have your buddy, as you said.
Ideally, you do the course with your friend and then...
And then
if you're ready to go, you can go anywhere. As long as you keep an eye on each other.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Wow. All right. Well, I'm super interested in this. I think I'll have to give it a shot.
Yeah, great.
Okay. Well, thanks, Jerome. It's been really great talking to you.
Okay.
Really informative. Okay.
Thanks once again to Jerome Houlin for coming on the show. I hope that was informative and entertaining for you, and I hope you'll get into freediving next time you find yourself at the shore of one of the world's great oceans, or even in a lake, or maybe even in your own bed. And thank you once again for listening. If you want more information about Jerome or any of the websites we mentioned or some of the films we mentioned during this podcast, you can always go to my website, 1000daysbetween.com. That's the number 1000daysbetween.com. Thanks once again, and I'll catch you next time.